Welcome to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. This is a podcast that will make you want to get outdoors and will give you some great ideas as a sport parent, athlete, or coach. Born in the beautiful mountain town of Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the Winter Sports Club was founded over a century ago and now serves a majority of kids in our community and has produced more Winter Olympians than any other club in North America. There are secrets and great stories to share as we play year-round in these mountains we call home. Our calling is to develop complete athletes on and off the mountain by cultivating a passion for the outdoors and a love of sports at all levels. Stay tuned to hear from Olympians, athletes of all ages, coaches, experts, and people who are doing amazing things to make an impact in our community and in their sport.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Nicole DeBoom. I'm a former professional triathlete who finally discovered the joys of skiing in my late 40s when I moved to Steamboat Springs with my family. We immediately discovered the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club, and it's become a huge part of our lives as my husband, Tim DeBoom, is a ski and bike coach, and my daughter, Wilder, has found happiness, friendship, and joy through skiing, jumping, riding, and more. I am thrilled to bring the positive energy of the Winter Sports Club to people all over the world. Thanks for listening. Now let's get started. All right, Brian, are you comfy?
I am comfy.
All right, well, then we better get started. A big hello and welcome back to our listeners today. It's been a little while. If you recall, we started the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club show in 2022 with the goal of spreading our love for all things outdoors and a side effect, that's what you call it, of educating and inspiring people around the world. Here's what happened. Thousands of listeners tuned in to hear from our coaches, parents, experts, and athletes. We got such great feedback that we are back with another season of fun and inspiration. And who better to kick things off than the new kid on our block, our new executive director, Brian Krill. Brian, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Nicole.
So fun. So first of all, welcome to Steamboat.
Appreciate it.
The truth is that you probably could have chosen any place to stake your next claim based on your amazing background. And in your previous life chapters, I know you spent 20 plus years in Colorado and then you left for over a decade, but Now you're back. So what about Steamboat called to you? Why do we get to hang out with you at this stage of life?
Sure. Well, again, as you said, I spent many years in Colorado. I went to Colorado College and then spent 18 years in Crested Butte. And, you know, frankly, that changes a guy. And so when I left Crested Butte, it was not out of anything other than to pursue some opportunities in the ski industry. I went to Park City, worked for the U.S. ski team and U.S. ski and snowboard for 3 years there. I had no desire to kind of jump from expensive ski town to expensive ski town in the West. And really, ultimately, my heart and soul is still in Colorado. And so at a very base level, that's what attracted me back to Colorado. But then Steamboat in particular, you know, this club really represents much of what I've done in my life and career. And, you know, the timing was right to get back here, not only just to get back to Colorado, but to get to Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club.
Oh my gosh, we're so lucky to have you. And you're not alone. You bring along a family, right?
Sort of. My family's kind of scattered around. My wife is actually teaching in Michigan at the University of Michigan this year. She has the second year of a one-year post, if that makes sense. So she will be back and planning on settling in here with me. And my youngest just started at Gonzaga. I have a sophomore at the Berklee School of Music, and then a stepdaughter who's almost 30 and has two little ones.
Oh my goodness. You know, I usually like go into professional stuff first, but we're on the family thing, and now I'm super intrigued. So your kids are all a little older.
Mm-hmm.
Your youngest, you said, is
18. She'll be 19 in a week or so.
And she's the one at Gonzaga?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, up in Spokane.
Spokane. Yes, interesting college. I was like, I know that college, but where is it? And so are you solo here because your wife's living in Michigan?
I'm solo here with my little almost two-year-old dog. So it's a boy and his dog right now.
And a lot of FaceTime.
Exactly. Uh-huh. A lot of FaceTime. I talk to my wife, obviously, almost every day. And even the new freshman in college, who I thought I might not hear from very much, is in almost daily contact as well, which is nice.
Well, that says something about your parenting. I did not call my parents every day from college.
No.
Let me tell you.
It might not be a call. It might be a text or a... You know, but she's doing great. We just went to family and parents weekend this last weekend, actually. And she was in a choir concert and a dance performance, and she's been there 5 weeks. So it's pretty cool to see her just throw herself into it.
Okay. So actually, this is interesting because clearly you have carved out an entire life and career in the world of outdoor sports and athletics, and you have children. One of which, at least, is more on the like performing arts angle of life. I mean, how did you guys like hit a point where you're like, well, I guess she's not going to be, you know, she's following a different path.
Yeah.
And how did you adapt? Because I'm just saying this because I'm feeling it right
now. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what to do because I don't know that world.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this will, I think, get into maybe some of the other things we'll discuss, but, you know, it's a fairly simple philosophy of parenting that aligns with ultimately a core coaching philosophy and even running this organization. But yeah, so my stepdaughter, who's almost 30, was a very talented ski racer in Colorado. She was on the Rocky Mountain division team for many years out of Crested Butte. She lived in Telluride for a bit, and she actually went to Steamboat Mountain School for a year. Her mom and dad are both CU Buffs. So I went through being a coach dad early in having kids when I had my stepdaughter. And then my biological daughters, yeah, they both gravitated toward the arts and music. And my youngest, who's at Gonzaga again, she's really into social justice and activism. And they're both beautiful skiers. They can ski, you know, just about anything growing up where they've grown up. But they just never had that sort of competitive or drive to be in kind of full-time snow sports programs. They put that energy into dance and music and the arts. And I couldn't be, you know, it's find your passion and pursue it at the highest level you can. And that's what they're doing in just in other areas.
Oh, and it's such an interesting journey of finding your passion because you obviously introduced them to the things that are your passion.
Yes.
And we do that because we want to do those things with our kids when they get older.
Yep.
But it's when they get old enough to actually have a say in it is when we have to recognize how serious it is or not, right?
Exactly.
Did you have like trouble at first, or was it pretty obvious and easy for you to be like, oh, they really do want to do that? Because you talk about drive and competitiveness, and that's like every kid, I think, the competitive drive comes out at different times in their life and manifests in different ways.
Yeah,
so it's
absolutely
hard to know what's real.
Yeah. I've said a fair amount over the years, there's nothing I hate more than forcing people to ski.
If that's a good point.
Because it's like anathema to me. Right. And so my daughters, when they honestly love to ski. They're lifelong skiers. When they visit or over the year, my youngest, you know, made sure to take her ski equipment, and she's going to join the college ski club, and just, you know, so, and they hike and we go rafting. So they're very much, they have a very deep love for the outdoors and for, those activities, but they didn't want to be, competitive athletes. They wanted to pursue other things. And that's, yeah, there are points in time when you're this as invested as I've been in this sort of youth sport world. There's a point in time where, of course, it's like, oh, it'd be cool if they did that. But I did that with Hannah, full stop. And I couldn't, you know, I love their music and dance and everything they're pursuing elsewhere.
Well, this is all amazing, because truly, as parents, and most of our listeners are parents of mm-hmm. kids in the program, you know, we draw on our own experiences from when we were kids.
Yeah.
And that's like what we mostly have to look at when mm-hmm. we're trying to guide our own kids. So it's cool to hear other parents' experiences and how you were able to navigate those
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one of the special things about our club.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's bringing that up, over the years, they did, my two biological daughters did competitive dance for many years. And a lot of parents would ask me the same questions. I think a lot of our winter sports club parents, you know, how do you do that? You spend thousands of dollars in the costumes and the travel. And, you know, I was a dance mom. I'm going to, you know, high schools in, you know, Salt Lake City and around around like rural Wyoming and Utah and you know, going to dance competitions. But you know, ultimately it's the same answer I would say, you know, that families involved with the Winter Sports Club, like it's priceless, right? It's what they want to be doing. We give them our unconditional support. It's a stretch financially. We make sacrifices in other areas to support what our kids love to do. And it's it's education. That was obviously very, maybe not athletic, but super active. I mean, they did, it was, you know, so it's not as much the sport or the pursuit as the support that we give them and the learning that they get out of it. And so that is, I share that for sure in common. I didn't have all my kids come up and be ski racers or winter competitors, but they did things that, you know, it looks and feels a lot very similar in terms of the demands on parents and our commitment to supporting our kids' activities.
Well, for sure. And I do believe that there's a really good argument for the skills they learn on the mountain mm-hmm. and through Winter Sports Club and the guidance from the coaches and all those things, and how it just translates into yeah. anything else they're going to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the pressure these kids are under as they get older, they're going to have it no matter what they pursue yep. if they're driven and competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, and I've seen that with all three of my daughters. You know, the ski racer is very driven from that experience, and the music and dance and some of the kind of social activism that my youngest has gotten involved in, they pursue these things with, you know, similar, all the skills that they get from mentors. My daughter did Model UN in high school, and, you know, went to competitions and had, you know, faculty advisors, and she planned the trips and had to do the budget. And, you know, these are the things kids should be doing to learn how to succeed in whatever they choose to do down the road.
Oh, for sure. And it sounds like you're creating leaders too, which I love. And I love that you have three girls, and I know there are boys out there in the world too, but I'm also a mom of a girl, and I'm yeah. always thinking, like, how do we create these strong kids who have amazing self-esteem and, like, mm-hmm. you know, to take that forward so that they can lead and help our world be better.
Very much so. Yeah, no, I think leadership is honestly at the core of education. I really see myself as devoting my personal and professional energies to education at its core, you know, both. Obviously, that's been largely in winter athletics, but it's also been academically. But that's, you know, at the core, it's about education. And I think at the core of education is leadership, in the sense that, not to geek out too much, but the core definition of education is to lead forth out of one's, you know, it's sort of like out of oneself and to lead others. I mean, that's the root of education is ultimately leadership. And I think that it translates to a philosophy of leadership that sort of everyone's a leader, right? The leader isn't the person at the front of the pack. The leader is sort of everyone involved with any pursuit that you're trying to achieve. And that, I think, you know, that translates to a big staff here at the club. That translates to all the, you know, 1,000 kids that we serve. That we're not here just to serve the fastest and the biggest and the best. We're here to serve all those kids and coaches and mentors with a educational base so that they all feel like that they're all empowered to be leaders, not only of others, but leaders in their own lives, right? Like goal setting and, right, that's leadership, right? I want to achieve X or Y. I'm going to set a goal to do it. I'm going to do it. That's a form of leadership. And then obviously that also translates into doing that with others and leading teams and all of that. So I think that's at the core of what kids learn through these sports.
Oh, for sure. And wait, weren't you a professor?
I will.
Hold on a minute.
Yes.
Like actually a professor in a college?
Yeah, I mean, not to get too fan, but yes, I taught at Western, what is it called now? Western Colorado University.
Okay. Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
But what's, you know, Western State College over the, but yeah, I taught there for 3 years, and taught communications and advocacy, you know, the kind of the required course in advocacy and ultimately kind of leadership rhetoric. So that was really fun teaching at the college level. I was just an adjunct professor, but it was great. And I taught intro to philosophy there as well. But then I also taught at Crested Butte Academy, where I was the athletic director, and taught, you know, all sorts of different high school classes. And then this last 3 years in California, I was the head of school of Sugar Bowl Ski Team and Academy. So, and there also I taught an intro to philosophy class as head of school, which was really fun.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So are we going deep today then or what?
Well, you asked me if some philosophies would come out of this interview.
Yeah, I think so.
And I said, yeah, you know, I do tend to think very philosophically. I majored in philosophy at Colorado College. So,
wow.
You know, kind of, again, philosophy and education is really, you know, the driving force of what I try to do, especially professionally. And I think these types of organizations, I have found that's often very, very much needed. And then I did a lot of nonprofit consulting, and it was a very similar process where I would ask my clients, or I, even in the few months I've been here coming up to speed, it's all, well, we do this and we do this and we do this and we do this and we have this program and that program and you know, this many kids. And it's like, okay, time out. Why are we doing all of that?
Oh.
How are we doing all of that? And that's, you know, that's what I, that's the type of leadership that I hope to bring here.
Oh,
is not, I know some of your questions was kind of, what are you going to change? What are you going to keep the same? I think,
okay. So what is, tell us.
I think that my hope is that leadership style translates to, you know, much of what we are doing as a club right here, right now, and over the last 100 years is exceptional, wonderful, awesome. But to be frank, it's also quite organic. And I, when I've asked that question, even in my short time here, it's a list, you know, it's a list of a lot of stuff that we do. And I think it is, we're entering an era where we do have to kind of pause, take a step back and say, you know, how are we doing it? Why are we doing it? Is it the right things to be doing in terms of our programming? Is it the right philosophy and pedagogy? Is it the right pathways toward our end goals? Mm-hmm. You know, those are really important questions to answer, and they're not, as you can probably tell already, I tend to demand a philosophic answer to those questions before we get into the logistics, the finance, the, you know, all that. And that's been a challenge in my career of, you know, I mean, these types of organizations are hugely logistical, or running a school is, you know, it's hugely logistical, but too often we start, you know, the tail wags the dog sort of thing, right? Like the logistics and the figuring out just how to implement all this programming and venues and kids and parents and coaches and staffing and like that starts to become the mission itself versus, wait a second, time out. We're only doing all that for this mission and this vision and these priorities and these objectives of our programming, and learning and education is at the center of that. And I'm really adamant that we're clear on that. It doesn't change the fact that we've got to do all the logistics and figure it all out on that level, but I want to make sure we know why.
Okay, so this is huge because pretty much every great organization has a clear mission, vision, mm-hmm. core mm-hmm. values, all those like foundational pieces.
Yep.
But they need to evolve, because if you're running an organization that built the mission 40 years ago and the world around you has changed and people's needs have changed, you might be a bit outdated. So did you like upset the ship right off the bat and you're like, all right, guys, let's look at the mission, vision, you know, values and redo it all?
No, thankfully, no.
Good, because it was already strong?
Yes.
Okay.
And honestly, that level of kind of reanalysis and reassertation of mission, vision, values has taken place at this organization in a very intentional way kind of over the last 10 years. And I've had some arm's length relationship with the organization over the years to know that. And just coming in, I've seen that like that's solid. So that like I have had a couple leadership positions where it was absolutely more like a turnaround type situation, or a, you know, we have a total identity crisis. We need to do just that. Like, what are our core values? What is our mission? Thankfully here, that's not, and part of what attracted me here is I'm at a point in my career where I want that to be more or less locked up, which it is here. But that's not to say that what you were getting at, there is a lot of work to do here to make sure that we're able to do that mission and implement that vision and stick to those values in a dramatically different environment than we were in 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Okay, so let's tell everyone then, can we nutshell them what our mission is?
We can. So the easiest way to state our mission is creating champions on and off the mountain. That's sort of that is our mission.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the easiest way to say it. That is it.
Right. And so I love when you said, why are we doing all this? How are we doing this? I guess that would be the next question is how do we do that?
Well, so one thing that I've played with is, and I did, this was something in Jackson that, you know, again, at that club, there was a more of a need to kind of actually reassert, like, what is our mission? And we went through that process. Here, that's crystal clear. But then, okay, let's get a little more granular, like champion. Let's just take that word. What does that mean? And again, here's going to be the professor in me coming out. But, champion is both a noun and a verb. And philosophically, I want to help the organization understand that, staff, kids, meaning that, yeah, sure, the champion is a noun, meaning the winner, the person on the podium that day or what have you. But we're also a values-driven organization that's about being a champion on and off the mountain. So that noun definition of champion is kind of the winner of the race that day. But what is the noun definition of champion off the mountain and on all the different training, you know, locations and all the different activities that you have to do even to be a champion on a podium, or just to be a champion in terms of your involvement and your dedication to your goals and things like that. So broadening that definition. And then we haven't even gotten to the verb part, where champion is too champion a cause, a value, a way of life, a lifestyle.
Other people.
Be a leader. Champion for your friends, your teammates, the community. So I think the what attracted me to this position is the crystal clear tradition of a very clear and well-established mission. It is one of the most value centered clubs I have seen in the country. Like it's just really deeply ingrained our core values. That's for real. That's not just fancy words on the wall. But again, my job is to make sure that that is the case for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, as much of that mission and much of that vision has grown out of a demographic in this town over the last 100 years where, you know, I think we all know that, you know, 30 years ago, this town was, you know, and our membership was mostly, you know, workaday families and ski instructor kids and multi-generation skiing families. And, you know, that has changed. And that's not a good or bad thing. It's just change. And so our mission isn't changed. Our values haven't changed, but there's a very different implementation of all that when, you know, fewer and you know, we moved here from wherever the last couple of years because we want our kids to have that lifestyle. We want our kids to be a part of that mission and those values that this club has been known for 100 years. But they're not the second or third generation of people that have been fostering that mission and those values over the years. So that's a different.
It is.
It's a different project.
It is. And, you know, honestly, I'm a perfect example of an end user of this new way because we moved here 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And part of moving here was we wanted to move to a place that was all about the kids.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a friend who had moved here a year or two before me, and she goes, Steamboat's all about the kids. But at the heart of that was the Winter Sports Club is all about the kids and how the things that they gain here are so much above and beyond the mountain that it almost just feels like another home to them. And that's when I was growing up, I was a swimmer and I always felt like anytime I walked on a pool deck anywhere, I just felt at home. Yeah. You just breathe the chlorine and you grab a kickboard and you know what to do and you go do your thing. And it was like home. And I wanted that for my kid, but not necessarily like staring at the black line on the bottom of a pool. And I didn't want to go sit in long swim meets every weekend. I'd rather be outside watching my kid do cool stuff. So anyway, I guess my point is that I'm relating to everything you said, and I do believe that Steamboat and the Winter Sports Club and its place here, we anchor this town for the kids.
Absolutely.
Have you ever experienced that? You have so much experience around the country, in and out of different clubs, and you've, you know, of course, gotten to know the leaders of the other clubs around the country. I mean, do they all have this vibe, or what about Steamboat's different?
Yeah, I mean, many of them have this vibe. Ski clubs in particular are honestly just these amazingly grounded organizations that do just what you said. You know, they're like a second home for kids and families. And I think what you're getting at is it's all centered around the kids and our athletes, but it's also, you know, this is a lifelong family commitment, or lifelong meaning, you know, the school age of the kids and that, but lifelong, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many alumni I've talked to here and, you know, I can't go to the diner or the coffee shop or anywhere without, you know, and somebody will ask, you know, hi, who are you? What are you? Oh, you're the new executive director. Oh, my cousin, my aunt, you know, I was a coach there and it's great.
Do they all have ideas for you too?
Oh yeah. Yes. And here's what you should do. But back to your question about kind of other communities, I think that yes, I've seen many clubs and had the Jackson in particular was, you know, was similar, like a very much a core part of the community was the ski and snowboard club. But Steamboat, it's like that on steroids. Of course, we don't condone steroids, but you know the saying, in the sense that it is more infused throughout this community at a deeper and wider level than any other community I've seen, and that is getting. So I'll take Jackson as an example. It was getting harder and harder with Jackson becoming a more and more popular destination resort to do what we do at a ski club, which is not destination resorty type stuff. It's day in, day out, training and educating our athletes and supporting our coaches and giving opportunities to families to get involved. That is not the mega resort mentality. It's set up for a week of skiing and you go home. That Steamboat is that too. Steamboat is a major destination resort, but what the community is centered around in terms of its local youth across sport and what this club represents over the last 100 years is frankly like we that's why I'm here. It is the focus, even for the tourists. Coming here as a destination resort, it's hard to leave here and not have some, you know, oh my gosh, look at the ski jumping and this and that and there. And it's a much more positive, it's a deeper, broader vibe here in Steamboat than I've seen anywhere else. It's more the part of the overall consciousness of this community. It's not, oh yeah, there's a ski club there, but there's 8 gazillion other things going on that totally overshadow it. I mean, like oftentimes we are the thing that's going on the most, that's the most recognizable.
Yes.
I got here July 2nd. Yeah, I arrived July 2nd, and on the 4th of July, there were, 5,000 people watching
jumping and jamming
after the parade? I mean, that does not exist in, I don't know if it exists anywhere else in the world, really.
You know, a Steamboat has actually ruined vacationing for me because nothing is as awesome or epic as what we have here.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And you know, I'm hungry to hear more, but I'm also actually hungry.
Just hungry. I thought I saw that coming.
Yeah. I mean, my stomach's growling. Are you hearing it? And I thought maybe this would be a great time for us to dig into a delicious chocolate chip Honey Stinger Oat and Honey Bar from our amazing sponsor, Honey Stinger. What do you think? Have you tried these before moving
here? I think that's
here?
A great idea. You know, I've tried many Honey Stinger products. And I'm a fan. I have not tried this new Oat and Honey Bar.
You know, what I love about Honey Stinger, A, they're local. B, they're just awesome. They support tons of cool different organizations doing great things. And they're all about living a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
So they're like the perfect fit. So when we went to them, we were like, would you mind sponsoring this podcast? And they're like, as long as you talk about our products. And of course we will. Course. And we were like, well, can you give us some so we can eat them on the air and be obnoxious? but what's cool is once you get a little more educated on Honey Stinger, they create products that are very intentional for athletes. They have 3 different phases, and any product that you buy from them, and you can get it at local stores, you can go on their website. They have either a prepare, perform, or recover little designation. And so just make sure that if you are getting ready to work out, you don't really want to have a recover product. You want to have a prepare product. And then they make these great perform products. So when you're out there on the trails, if you find yourself bonking, you can have one of their Honey Stinger chews or a gel or something that's going to give you more immediate results. But right now we're in the prepare phase. I guess we're preparing for our evenings for you walking your dog or for me running around and doing all the after school activities we need. But to be honest, I love this company. Brian, what do you think about your bar?
I need to take a bite.
Mouthful. Awesome. Well, while you're taking a bite, they just launched these oat and honey bars, I believe last year. And they remind me of the old salted nut bars where they have like that yummy core that they're kind of
salted nut bar. Yeah.
They're kind of candy-ish, but
this is delicious.
I mean, that's a thing. Like, why would you ever eat energy food that wasn't delicious?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Are we allowed to bash other products?
I mean, why not? They don't sponsor us.
You remember the original Power Bars?
Oh, yeah.
It was like part sawdust, part honey, part... But we ate it. I mean, that was a long time ago.
Well, that's what they had.
That's what you had. It was the original...
Yeah.
But no, Honey Stinger... has definitely like it tastes better than most of the products out there.
Yeah.
It's well, sort of like you said, it's intentionally designed. And it's very important in youth athletics to start
absolutely
having the kids understand even those three words, right? What are the three? Prepare,
perform, and recover. Well, for sure. I mean, when I was a kid swimmer, we did not even bring a water bottle on deck.
Right.
And if you said, I want to get a drink of water, your coach was like, no, you're not getting out. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? But now we know a lot more. And we know that you need to keep fueling yourself. When you're out on the mountain for like 4 hours, if you don't put some calories and good calories in your body, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. So we've mapped out over the years, right? Like there's certain ages where we get pretty specific about like, hey, at this age, a kid needs his or her parents and coaches to like, just make sure they're eating healthy. At this age, they need to start understanding that a little bit better themselves, making healthy choices themselves.
What age is that? Because I want to know.
You know, I would say that's as young as kind of the kids U8, U10 starting our programs, where it's like, yeah, you're tired because you had a Pop-Tart for breakfast instead of... So again, at that young age, it's a partnership with the parents of like, they should have some protein in the morning, this and that. You know, that's young for a kid to figure that. But then soon thereafter, it's like, yeah, I feel better when I have an egg instead of, you know, a Pop-Tart. And so now I'm going to start making that choice. And then just like anything in our programs, there's sort of a progression, right? And then, boy, now I'm a U16 or a U18 and I need to actually understand how certain foods affect my performance and whether, you know, what do I need to eat to prepare for training? What do I need to eat to perform? And how do I need to eat to recover?
You know, this is actually really cool. I was thinking like from U8s all the way up to, you know, high school and college, that there is this progression, like you said, but there's a point in the middle where you're telling them what they should do. And then they hit this point where they're like, I'm not listening to you.
Yes.
But this is where the coaches come in.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, but your coach said, and then they're like, oh yeah, my coach walks on water as they should.
Yep.
And if your coach said it, then they trump the parents. So parents, if you want your kids to eat healthier, you make sure you send your coach a quick note.
There you go.
And you tell them what to do.
Tell your coach what to tell your kid.
Exactly.
And then they'll listen.
Is that, can we really say that right now?
I think we probably can. And obviously we do, you know, I'm the new guy here, but you know, we do make that a point of emphasis with our coaching. You know, like we should be intentional about, you know, that we love, and I would love to see more of this when, you know, families send food on the road with the kids, when the coach does a grocery shop and we get condos instead of hotel rooms so that they're not, you know, A, financially and B, nutrition wise, like we're not just eating fast food. And, you know, that's for the swim team to do when they're at Applebee's.
Right.
But, you know, and of course we're in resort, you know, we're traveling in resorts and it's expensive. So again, culturally, teamwork, team cohesion wise, it's always best to have, you know, food at the condo, really be intentional, have the coaches promoting, you know, healthy eating. It's a big part of it.
Okay, I'm just going to take a total sidetrack here.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about what you did as a kid.
Oh, what did I do as a kid? You know, I was I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the international mecca of skiing.
It's not gray there at all.
I was introduced to skiing through cross-country skiing in Wisconsin. My folks were very recreational cross-country skiers, and we'd go up north skiing. My kind of eyes were opened to more of the skiing at a higher and higher level because they started to go do the Coeur d'Alopet, which is the half Birkebeiner race. And they did it at a very recreational, like get out in the woods type of level. But I went up there a few times as a kid. And I was just like, whoa, what is the, you know, I mean, that's a big international ski, you know, it's the biggest international ski event that this country hosts. Of course, now we have the World Cup coming up in Minneapolis, which is I'm really excited about maybe getting to this winter. But in any event, that kind of opened my eyes to skiing at a very different level. And then my brother and I kind of broke off, and there were a couple lifts it was Telemark Ski Area that the Birkebeiner was hosted at. And there was like a T-bar and a crappy little lift. And we started alpine skiing, and then it became my passion from the second I started doing it.
Wait, is a T-bar like a Pama?
Yeah, it's a
a worse kind of Pama? Because this Pama is kind of crazy.
Two-sided Pama.
Gosh.
You know, instead of a disc, it's a T, so you can have a person on either side of the T.
Oh my gosh, it's like a recipe for disaster for beginner.
It is, yeah. Absolutely. So I...
Oh, yeah, that's
my introduction to skiing was on tow ropes and T-bars in, 200, 300 vertical feet throughout Wisconsin. But so I was just a high school racer, but I loved it, and I thought I was racing at a really cool high level. And then this USSA racing was like something other kids were doing, and I begged my parents because those kids were getting faster. But I was very involved at my high school. I played football, which I very much loved as well. I was just kind of a traditional kind of multi-sport athlete in high school. But then I did ski for Colorado College for my freshman year, and then really just started pursuing coaching and teaching it right out of college. And that became my passion. And I wound up getting to coach in far higher levels and bigger venues and more, than I raced, nowhere close to that level. And I was like, and honestly, I try to bring that still every day, in the sense that I really want to see gratitude in our athletes here. And I think that I remind, and parents for that matter, we are incredibly lucky and privileged to be able to live this lifestyle. I take that very seriously, not seriously in the sense of being serious about it, but seriously in terms of, and again, that's part of my background. Like I didn't grow up in Steamboat or Aspen or whatever and start skiing these types of mountains and have this access to training and these coaches. I was far from that. I was a recreational cross country skier and a high school ski racer in Milwaukee. And so I guess that all translates to like, I'm very grateful. I feel very blessed to be have the opportunities that I've had. And I want to see that in our kids and our coaches, that they are born here. They do get to do this at this level right out of the gate. And there's a part of me that's like, do you know how lucky you are? And I think that's important.
It's the pinch me vibe.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
We're out here?
Yeah.
I just love all of that. Last year, we actually talked a lot about a couple things you mentioned, which was diversity, diversification, that is. Diversity is a whole nother topic.
That might be a different podcast.
We need to get more diversity and inclusion in this sport. But diversification, we talked to a few experts last year, and we also talked a lot about the importance of fun.
Yes.
And it sounds like you experienced both through your personal journey. And how do you feel about those two concepts as you are in your professional side of this career?
Of diversification and fun?
Yeah.
What do you mean by diversification?
Multiple sports. I played football, or not just sports, other things.
Sure,
kids, performing arts, social justice, all the stuff.
Yeah, no, I think to me, it's... Again, it goes back to the philosophy of, so even if I want to be the best athlete, it is about diversification at the younger ages, all the way up through, right? We know even a World Cup athlete, if they're not taking time to go surfing and see friends and, Well, when I was working in Park City, even the partnership with Westminster College, where any kid on the U.S. ski team could go to Westminster College, it had direct performance results where, you know, athletes that are have something else, an academic pursuit or an intellectual pursuit or a business pursuit, something else, they're going to perform better than an athlete who's totally focused, even at not that they're they are totally focused, but that if that's all they do and they're not diversified at all, and that starts young, and that's a philosophy that has to be, you know, fostered all the way through. And so,
well, and it's easy once a kid shows promise to say, oh, you should quit all the other stuff.
Yeah,
because no, you're showing some promise. So if you put all your eggs in this basket, maybe this will happen. But what happens when they do that?
It limits it. It stunts their development. It's as simple as that. And again, to be really, really, really good at these sports, all of which are very technical, it takes a long time. It takes a lot of work, and you have to love it in order to commit to all of that. And the only way to love it is to be diverse. And even from an athletic standpoint, so I remember a presentation from Sasha Rierick years ago, who was a U.S. ski team coach. And, you know, he was really, really blunt about it at a coaching conference. He said, you know, okay, a standard fist slalom course is, you know, a set at about, you know, anywhere from 9 to 12 meters. And I saw this at club after club after club. Everybody is setting race simulation courses, right? They're like, well, we're going to prepare our kids. So this is a diversification principle, right? We're going to set courses just like the race, because then the kids will get really good at that course, and then when they go to the race, they'll. And the problem is that works a lot of the time, in a very short term way, right? Like, yeah, the kids, if you are going to be the setter and you set a course for 2-3 weeks ahead of time that is exactly what they're going to see, they might win that run, but it has done nothing for their long term development. And so he said, you know, you should be setting 5-meter courses, 20-meter slalom course, you know, just like throw crazy crap at them and then come back to, okay, now, you know, maybe 70% of your training time is in this really diversified environment. And then sure, we then want to hone that in to the core, you know, what the course is going to be like on race day. But that's the majority of time should be spent. And you take that into the younger ages, or you take that into this idea of multi-sport versus early specialization, and it's the same. Like, the kids need to be doing a bunch of different, even if they're skiing most of the time at a young age, they should be skiing in crazy diverse environments, you know?
Yes.
Like trees and crud and, you know, and finding all those, the limits of their balance and the limits of their equipment and the limits of their, you know, their comfort zone, and in it's obviously safely and with good mentorship and good progression. But that's what over time will, when and if they get to a point where they have to be like precise on a steep pitch and an icy slope and they have to put it down, all of that will be there for them. If they've been really singular focused on precision or specialization too early, they just simply won't have the base to do it.
Well, let me tell you something about different ways to ski. Because when we moved here, I didn't own any skis. And by the end of my first season, I was like, how do I have 5 different kinds of skis in my garage already? And that's probably low for most families. Yeah. There's a lot of ways you can glide around on snow.
There are. And one of the, you know, back to some of the early questions, right? Like, this club represents the ability to slide around on snow in just within our club in the most diverse way of just about any program in the world. I mean, we have every you know, we have the breadth of our snow sports. So in the winter, so here, let me just give a little bit of the diversification answer, right? this is a question that's been asked by many, many parents, right? Like, okay, so multi-sport, got it. All right, diversification, got it. Okay, then my kid's going to do formal ski training on Tuesdays and Thursdays and formal hockey training on Wednesdays and Fridays. So yeah, they're diversifying, but they're in all formal sports. And part of diversifying is play and, you know, in, you know, just what we call deliberate practice, right? And not to get curmudgeon-y here, but you know, we know that we've lost a lot of that in our society and culture, where, you know, it used to be, you know, dinner's at 6, you know, it's 3 o'clock, you get home from school and it's like, dinner's at 6, Brian, you know, if you're here, you eat. And if you don't, you know, and if you don't, it gets dark at 6:45 and I'm going to call you in. But other than that, like I was out playing whatever.
Right.
Kick the can or baseball or football or riding our bikes and building jumps and all that. So a big part of diversification is making sure that your kids have white space in their days and weeks, even if they're in a really high level, intense, older program here at the club. We need to support them having time off, rest, recovery, playing the guitar, doing art. That is just as important to their ski development as the formal training. And so even over the years, we've, in the coaching community, we've, you know, we again want to be intentional about even the words training or practice or whatever. And, you know, a pet peeve of mine over the years is like when I see the coach email go out and say, we're just free skiing today. And then you get the emails of like, I'm not paying, you know, from the parent, I'm not paying for my kid to go free skiing. It's like, okay, first of all, take the word just out. And like, free skiing is training, but okay, let's maybe work on the word training, because training sounds like it's a formal, like from 2 to 4, we're going to train. And obviously there is a lot of that, but there needs to be the other stuff too. There needs to just be, okay, we're ending practice or training at 3 today, ski for another hour, guys. Go play follow the leader. Go find the jumps and ski the trees. And too many programs have gotten into this. You know, we're sending the message that kids should come to training and that's it. Or we go to the race, right, or the competition and they do their 2 runs and they sit in the lodge and eat chicken fingers. And it's like that could be a fun day of skiing with your buddies, meeting kids from other teams. And that's, sure enough, you see the kids that do that, and they're the ones that are having more fun, staying it longer, and probably hit different levels of success.
Yes. Yes. I couldn't agree more. You know, would you say that your personal values align with the club and, you know, what you're doing in your life right now, the direction you're taking, you've taken?
Yeah, very much so. I think, you know, and this is an important topic for our staff, just work-life balance. The coaches here and everyone here works very, very hard, and many of them are also doing other jobs and all that. So we need to, everything I just said about the athletes, we need to model better as professionals and people and adults. And all that said, there's very little separation for me between my work and my life. And it's just, you know, kind of what I do. And I'm very committed to it, personally and professionally. As I've already said, with my kids, I have a very similar parenting philosophy as I have with running an organization. And it's all about kind of opportunity, right? Just find your passion, commit yourself to getting better at what you love. And, but again, that said, that can be a lot of burnout, right? I too need, you know, because my personal and professional is so aligned and connected, I also need that time to go out on my raft and fly fish and not think about any of this stuff.
Totally.
So.
And you know, at the end of the day, sometimes you'll be like, well, what do you really want out of life? What do you really want? What do you want for yourself? What do you want for the people you love? Like, what do you want?
Yeah. What do I want? You know, as cliche as it sounds, I want for my own kids, what I want for every athlete in the club, which is to be their very best self. And that's, I again, I know that sounds cliche, but to me, that it's not cliche. It's it to me, that's comes from a career of seeing the seeing that happen with hundreds, if not thousands, of kids through these sports, right? Whether they're on the they make the US ski team or an NCAA Division I team, or they're a lifelong learner or skier, that's what drives me, is that seeing that over the last 25 or 30 years is I there's very few environments that do that better, that drive people to be their very best self, than this mix of gliding down the mountain in, you know, in the snow and with friends and with, you know, and then on the competitive side with goals and giving it your all and success and failure. And that to me does as good a job of human development as anything out there. And that's what drives me. And that's what I want for my kids. That's what I want for myself. That's what I want for the parents and the athletes of this club, is to be their very best selves. And this is a pretty amazing platform to do that.
Oh my gosh. We probably couldn't have ended this on a better note, but I do have one more question for you. We could talk forever. I might have to have a second interview with you, okay? So that's truly awesome. Actually, the most cliche would be like what always comes to my mind. I just want them to be happy. But like there's this whole underlying, like, what does that mean?
Well, yeah, I don't know that people are happy unless they feel like, so back to your fun question.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
People, right? Like I have to clarify at this club that of course we are 100% dedicated to the kids having fun all the way through. The coaches should be like, this should be an enjoyable place to work. But it's not just that type one fun. It's, I have seen over my whole career that kids aren't having, you know, if it's just fun and 2 or 3 years goes by and they're in these programs, like they're not going to, the real fun, you know, sticky fun, if you will, comes from getting better at something, from progressing. And we see that anecdotally, we see that in research about youth sports up and down every, you know, no matter where you look. Kids like to have fun, but that's, if it's not fun connected to improvement and some level of progression, then it becomes not as much fun pretty quickly.
I'm glad you hit on that. Because I agree. I couldn't agree more. And it's interesting. A lot of people listening will be like, yeah, well, in my career, I also feel that connection.
Exactly.
And in my parenting, I feel that connection. Yeah. So there's lots of ways to apply it. You know, I think we need to wrap it. You okay. Got stuff to do. You got a program to run.
It's snowing out there, and that's definitely getting the juices flowing.
It really is. And you got big shoes to fill. Your predecessor had over 35 years, I think, in the club, Sarah.
I know.
And she'll be on the show at some point, too. And it's just so cool to, like, you know, watch the evolution here.
Yeah.
So one thing we will keep the same. So with all the things that may change and evolve and the innovations that you'll bring, one of the things that's going to stay the same is the last question we ask every guest that comes on the show, which is, are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is the greatest lesson you have learned through sport?
What is the greatest lesson? I know you sent this to me ahead of time.
It's very hard when you're on the spot. Like, you can think of nothing. You're like, I didn't learn anything. You already said pretty much everything you said you learned through sport. But now you have to come up with something else, too.
I think how is this for a cliche? I think it's, again, the sport, I think it more than anything, brings out the human in us. And I think these sports in particular, so what I've learned is that when I'm in the outdoors and when I'm pushing my body to, you know, even if it's just kind of work up a sweat on a hike on a beautiful fall day, whether and not necessarily an intense workout or an epic powder day, I feel more alive than I do doing anything else. And that I have to remember that on a daily basis. I have to get away from this desk and get out there with the kids. And that's the greatest lesson I've learned through sport, is that it makes me feel alive. I've seen it make many, many kids come alive. I think I see kids that struggle in the classroom or struggle with their family or struggle with their friends, and they get out on the hill and they come alive, and all that goes away. And it's skiing and the pursuit of sport and wind in your hair and bugs in your teeth. And that's to give that gift to these athletes, is a gift that, again, that's what I've learned through sport. So I want to make sure that all these kids learn that from sport.
Bugs on your teeth, baby.
That's right.
That's the takeaway. Brian, what a blast. So happy you're here. And just thank you.
Thanks,
and welcome.
Nicole. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. Check out the club's winter and summer programs at sswsc.org. If you have a special topic or guest you want featured, we'd love to hear from you. Now get out there and support, lead, or be a champion on or off the mountain.